Hello, this is Mary from Talking Information Center. Today, I will be reading from Good Old Days, March-April 2026 issue. The first section is titled Irish Blessings, Cheerful Childhood Memories, Hearken Forth This Buffet of St. Patrick's Day Dishes, by Jennifer Broadstreet Hess. Every March 17th, people across the world celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Having traced my great grandparents' roots back to Ireland, our family has always commemorated the holiday with cherished family traditions. As a young girl, I remember waking up before school, excitedly, springing out of bed and scanning the pile of clothing on my closet floor for any garment with a hint of green. For kids who couldn't find anything green, their moms would usually pin a homemade shamrock on their shirts so they wouldn't feel left out of the festivities. My girlfriends and I loved to spend our time at recess resting in the shade of an aged oak tree, searching through the soft beds of lush clover. We would carefully comb through each section, dreaming of finding a rare four-leaf clover. If a person were to find one, it was said that it would bring tremendous luck and blessings in life. The school lunch ladies always enjoyed taking their creativity up a notch. With a green school menu, shamrock green dyed ham slices with sweet green peas on the side, and iridescent lime jello with whipped cream for dessert. In the afternoon, our class would line up and stroll downtown to observe our small town's colorful and lively St. Patrick's Day parade. In the evening, my mom and other church ladies would be busy working in the church kitchen, prepping food for our St. Patrick's Day supper and fundraiser. It was a joyous time of families and neighbors coming together, sharing their favorite vintage recipes with one another for a good cause. Buffet tables were full of steaming traditional Irish foods and delectable desserts. Shepherd's pie, Irish pea salad, sour cream pound cake with lemon glaze, Blarney stones, and more. An inherited recipe that my mom always prepared was brown sugar glazed corned beef and cabbage. The sweet and tangy brown sugar mustard glaze tantalized my taste buds. Daddy and other men in the congregation always went back for seconds. My friends and I always made sure we snagged several Blarney stones and slices of pound cake for the dessert table, for the drive home. I hope you will try one of my family's delicious inherited recipes this holiday season. St. Patrick's Day is a time to remember and celebrate Irish family customs and traditional heritage among friends and neighbors. Laughter is brightest where the food is best. Brown sugar glazed corned beef and cabbage. My mom's corned beef recipe is extra flavorful, finished off under the broiler with brown sugar mustard glaze, gives it a delectable crispy crust. Your family will be coming back for seconds. 4 to 5 pounds corned beef brisket, 2 whole cloves, 10 whole black peppercorns, 2 bay leaves, 8 medium carrots peeled and chopped, 8 medium potatoes peeled and chopped, 8 medium yellow onions peeled and chopped, 1 medium head of cabbage cut into 8 wedges, chopped fresh parsley for garnish, brown sugar glaze, 1/4 cup mustard, 1/2 cup maple syrup, 1/4 cup dark brown sugar. Wipe the corned beef with a damp paper towel. Place in a large pot and cover with cold water. Add cloves, peppercorns, and bay leaves. Bring to a boil. Reduce the heat and simmer for 5 minutes. Skim the surface and then cover and let cook for 5 to 7 hours until the meat is fork tender. Add carrots, potatoes, and onions during the last hour of cooking the corned beef. Add the cabbage during the last 20 minutes. Cook until the vegetables are tender. Put the glaze in a small saucepan over medium heat. Combine mustard, maple syrup, and brown sugar. Bring to a boil, stirring constantly. Reduce heat and simmer for 5 minutes. Let mixture cool and set aside. spray a large casserole baking dish with non-stick spray. Place the cooked corned beef brisket in the baking dish. Brush the top and sides with a glaze. Place the brisket under the broiler, 5 to 6 inches from the heat, on a low setting. Brush the corned beef several times with the glaze and cook for about 10 minutes or until it looks shiny. Arrange the meat on one side of a serving platter. Place the cabbage and other vegetables beside the meat. Garnish with parsley. Makes 8 servings. Shepherd's pie, this classic comfort food, can be prepared in under an hour and is a perfect way to use up leftover mashed potatoes. 1½ pounds ground beef. 1 large onion finely chopped. 1/4 teaspoon seasoned salt. 1/4 teaspoon pepper. 1 cup beef broth. 1 tablespoon Worcestershire sauce. 3 to 4 tablespoons butter divided. 2 tablespoons flour. 1 cup frozen peas thawed. 1 cup frozen carrots thawed. 1 cup frozen corn thawed. 5 potatoes peeled. Milk as needed. Salt and pepper to taste. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. In a large skillet over medium heat, brown the beef with the onion. Drain grease after beef is browned. And add seasoned salt, pepper, beef broth, and Worcestershire sauce. Cook for 5 minutes. Add 2 tablespoons of butter, letting it melt. Slowly stir the mixture together, adding flour. Cook and stir to thicken the broth into gravy. Add peas, carrots, and corn to the mixture and cook for 5 minutes, set aside. For the topping, boil the potatoes until soft and then drain and mash them, adding 1 to 2 tablespoons of butter and milk to desired consistency. Season with salt and pepper. Place the meat mixture in a medium-sized casserole dish. Cover the meat mixture with mashed potatoes. Bake for 30 minutes or until the pie is brown on top and the mixture is heated thoroughly. Irish pea salad. This refreshing sweet pea salad with light zesty dressing is the perfect addition for potlucks or family celebrations. It can be prepared ahead of time and refrigerated 1 day in advance. 4 cups frozen peas thawed. 1/2 cup chopped celery. 1/2 cup chopped red bell pepper, 1/4 cup chopped onion, 1 cup diced sharp cheddar cheese, 1 cup mayonnaise, 1/2 cup mayonnaise, 1/3 cup sour cream, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, 1 tablespoon sugar, salt and pepper to taste. In a large bowl, combine peas, celery, red bell pepper, onion, and cheddar cheese, mixing well. Set aside. For the dressing in a small bowl, combine the mayonnaise, sour cream, apple cider vinegar, and sugar, whisking well. Add salt and pepper to taste. Pour the dressing over the pea salad mixture, mixing thoroughly. Refrigerate for 1 hour before serving. Sour cream pound cake with lemon glaze. This melt-in-your-mouth pound cake recipe is moist, buttery, and bursting with fresh citrus flavor. 3 cups flour, 1/4 teaspoon baking soda, 1/8 teaspoon salt, 6 eggs at room temperature, 1 cup butter at room temperature, 3 cups sugar, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 1 teaspoon lemon juice or almond extract, optional, 1 cup sour cream, lemon glaze, 3/4 cup confectioner's sugar, juice from 1 lemon. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. In a small bowl, sift flour, baking soda, and salt together. Set aside. Separate egg yolks and whites into 2 different bowls. In a medium bowl, cream, butter, and sugar. Add egg yolks 1 at a time and blend until creamy. Stir in vanilla and lemon juice or almond extract as desired. Add dry ingredients alternately with sour cream. Beat the egg whites to a soft peak and then fold them into the cake mixture. Spray a tube pan with non-stick cooking spray. Spoon batter into pan, bake for 1 hour and 15 minutes. For the lemon glaze, blend the confectioner's sugar and lemon juice well. Pour over hot cake after the cake is removed from pan. Blarney Stones. Every St. Patrick's Day, my neighbor would share a plate of her sweet and salty pound cake cubes, dipped in frosting and rolled in peanuts, to celebrate our Irish heritage. 2 cups confectioner's sugar, 1/2 cup milk, 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla, 2 cups dry roasted salt peanuts, chopped finely, 1 pound cake. Place confectioner's sugar in a medium bowl. Add milk slowly, whisking constantly, until mixture has a thin frosting consistency. Whisk in vanilla, set the bowl aside. Pour the peanuts into a small bowl. Line a plate or flat surface with wax paper. Cut pound cake into bite-sized cubes. Dip a cube of pound cake in the frosting mixture and then roll it in the peanuts. Place it on wax paper to dry. Repeat with remaining pound cake cubes. Flashback fun. Paul Stuckey of the trio Peter, Paul, and Mary wrote the wedding song, There Is Love, in 1968 for co-member Peter Yarrow's wedding in 1969. Paul released the song as a single on his first solo album in 1971. Good Old Days Poetry. Loveliest of Trees by A. E. Housman, 1859 to 1936. Loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough, and stands about the woodland ride, wearing white for Eastertide. Now of my 70 years, 20 will not come again, and take from 70 springs a score, it only leaves me 50 more. And since to look at things in bloom, 50 springs are little room. About the woodlands I will go to see the cherry hung with snow. Next is titled, Could I Ever Thank Her Enough? Her mother worked wonders with her sewing machine and made her daughter's wedding days special, by Carol J. Bond. My mother, Lucille C. Johnson, was the mother of 3 children, Richard, born in 1936, Carolyn, me, born in 1942, and Eloise, born in 1945. She and Daddy, known as F period A period, married in 1934, with the service officiating by my mother's uncle, Reverend J.C. Bussey. Mother worked at the New Gallant Velk store in our North Georgia town of Elberton, first to help get it set up and running, and then as a sales clerk after its opening. She was also a proficient seamstress, and for many years she sewed for the public. She made everything from underwear to wedding dresses. She even made the 1956 evening dress worn by June Adams as Miss Pandora at the University of Georgia. She made all the clothes worn by my sister and me, panties, slips, dresses, and coats. As children, we were never ashamed of our homemade clothes because they looked as good as what the other girls wore. And we always had an oversupply, for it seemed she was always sewing. Additionally, she kept a 2-story home, and she cooked, cooked, cooked for her husband, kids, and all her friends. I became engaged in September 1962, and immediately began planning for the big day when we would get married. I looked at beautiful ready-made wedding dresses, but they were so expensive. I talked to Mother, and she was more than willing to sew a dress for me. We went to Gallant Belk, which had a large sewing department with patterns from McCall's, Simplicity, and Butterick, and all kinds of fabrics and notions. We found the pattern there, but they didn't have the fabric I wanted. Mother then drove us 100 miles to Atlanta, and we went to Rich's department store. There we found just what I wanted. White peau de soie, which had the smooth, silky texture that I thought would be perfect. We also purchased yards of tiny pearls to be used on the pointed sleeves and around the neck of my dress. The wedding date was set for February 24th. And as soon as we got home, Mother began measuring cutting, and basting to get the fit right. As always, she used the dining room table as her cutting surface. The dress was floor length with a small V-shaped cut in the front hem, so I could walk more easily. It had a short train in the back and an extra long zipper down the back. Mother attached 30 shank buttons, which she had covered with the peau de soie fabric, down the length of the zipper. It looked amazing. In the meantime, I had chosen my sister as maid of honor and my sister-in-law and former roommate as attendants. I had two little cousins age 4 and 7 and couldn't decide on which to be the flower girl, so I chose both. It was mother's decision that she would make all the dresses for the bridesmaids and flower girls. As we were getting married in February near Valentine's Day, I had chosen a shade of burgundy for those bridesmaids and a pink organdy for the little cousins. One of my bridesmaids lived in Atlanta and one in North Carolina. So the flower girls lived in Macon. You can imagine the difficulty mother had in getting each dress to fit correctly. So over several months, there was a lot of coming and going and trying on. I don't know how she kept track of which dress was for which visitor, but she managed everything perfectly. Then Mother decided to cover small cardboard ovals with burgundy fabric and place the veiling around each shape to serve as hats for the bridesmaids. She also made a wool going-away suit for me, as well as a lace dress for herself to wear at the wedding as mother of the bride. I know I thanked her, hugged her neck, and thanked her again, and I told her I loved her. But did I do it enough? Was I too much of a happy-go-lucky, just fixing to get married girl? Thinking all that sewing, just what mother did on a regular basis. As if that wasn't enough, mother did the same thing for my sister Eloise, who got married in July of the same year. Again, mother made the wedding dresses, 3 bridesmaid dresses, 2 flower girl dresses, and a going-away outfit. And last of all, a dress for the mother of the bride. I don't know how she managed to get it all done. Mother has gone to live with the Lord now, but Eloise and I still thank her and thank her and thank her whenever we think of our weddings and all the work she did to make our days extra special. Next is Bits and Pieces. Seeing Red. It was 1982, and my new husband and I were boarding a plane at Nashville International Airport, headed to what was at the time called Dallas-Fort Worth Regional Airport. I filed through the first-class section of the plane, dealing with my cumbersome carry-on bags. As I made my awkward progression to my coach seat, I looked up to see the passenger seated there, who was gently smiling at me from his roomy first-class location. I readily and eagerly returned the smile, for I realized quickly who I had the pleasure of encountering on this special day. There were a lot of people behind me ready to get on board and get settled, but I paused and said, "Hello, Red." It just rolled off my tongue as if I were speaking to an old friend. What a thrill it was on that memorable day to get to say hi to someone as remarkable and famous as Red Skelton. I will never forget his voice as he spoke to me that day in a way that only he could. "Hello, dear." His beautiful smile was directed right at me. As a little girl growing up in Atlanta, Georgia, in the 1960s, our family never missed the Red Skelton Hour. That brief encounter on the airplane has been a highlight of my 71 years. By Carol Norman. Next is titled Wedding Day. When my husband Jack and I were married in 1954 in San Fernando Valley, California, my parents rented a hall for the wedding reception. It was situated on a slight incline at the end of a street. The gated parking lot was in front of the building. I pictured my friends and family writing "just married" on our car windows with white shoe polish and tying cans to the rear bumper, which were things folks did back in that time. I wanted to prevent that kind of mischief, so I devised a plan, enlisting my uncles to help. We parked Jack's 1950 Chevy, our getaway car, several blocks away. The plan called for my Uncle Frank to drive us in his car from the venue to where our car was parked. Two other uncles were to operate the gates, so anyone wanting to follow us would have a difficulty leaving. We would have a head start and be on our way to our honeymoon before anyone got there in time to chase us, honking horns and yelling, all that usual hoopla. This plan had an added benefit. I figured with my uncles helping, they wouldn't be among the pranksters preparing all kinds of wedding nonsense. I gleefully anticipated the commotion that would ensue, as anyone who wanted to chase us but would be caught in the parking lot jam and arrive just as Jack and I were driving off, laughing and waving goodbye to them. What actually happened was that the uncles did such a good job, no one was able to get out of the parking lot at all. No one followed us. No one chased us. Uncle Frank dropped us off and went back to the reception. Jack and I got into the car and started on our merry way without anyone around, without anyone to see us off, without any hoopla at all. It was a gigantic letdown after all my meticulous planning by Joanne Shula Cook, and there's a picture included. Joanne and Jack on their wedding day, and she's wearing a beautiful big white wedding dress with a veil, and he's wearing a white tux with a tiny black bow tie. Next is titled, Close Encounter of a Brief Kind. I was about 8 years old when General Eisenhower and his presidential campaign entourage were visiting many cities by rail. What an exciting day it was when our entire school population boarded buses and headed down to the railroad station for the big event. Some of us kids had I Like Ike buttons and banners. We had gathered all this free stuff as we hung around the campaign office downtown. Then we bunched up along the railroad tracks, ready and waiting to shout and wave as the train began to stop in Appleton, Wisconsin. We fidgeted and fooled around, but the teachers kept us herded into groups. Finally, the ground began to vibrate and all heads turned to the right as we heard a distant sound of the train whistle. The familiar and exciting rumble of the monstrous wheels gave us rise to shouts of glee as arms and hands frantically waved, hats and banners. Then whoosh, head spun to the left as the train sped away. I caught a glimpse of Ike standing proudly on the red, white, and blue decorated platform of the last train car. He smiled and waved. The train faded into the horizon. I didn't know much about politics, but I did for a few seconds shiver with a sense of importance at seeing, in person, a real presidential candidate. But I must admit that I was much more delighted to have had a half day off from school. By Sherry Reiner. Next story, Sweet 16 and $5 Richer. My mother, Golden Emily, was born in 1930. In Bell Gardens, California, the eldest child of Alexander and Mary Margaret. Mom was 15 years old in 1945 when she met my dad at the Strand Theater in Bell Gardens, where Dad was an usher. He told us he immediately fell in love with Mom. One of Mom's uncles could see how they were quickly falling in love with each other, so her uncle made her a $5 bet with her that she couldn't stay Sweet 16 and never been kissed until her 16th birthday on April 10th, 1946, and she won. We still have the $5 bill with her typewritten note that explains about the bet. In 1946, $5 seemed like $1 million to a teenager. Mom and Dad married on February 27th, 1949, while Mom was still a senior in high school, much to the envy of several of her girlfriends. Wanting to be a mom more than anything in the world, her dreams were fulfilled when my brother Kenny was born in 1954. Next to my sister Karen came in 1957, and then me 11 months later in 1958. Just as Mom had hoped, Karen and I became best friends, as well as the closest of sisters. Just after Kenny was born, my folks bought the first and only home in Buena Park, California. Mom and Dad both passed away after 66 years of marriage. I am positive that even in heaven, they're still holding hands tightly, just as they always did wherever they went. By Kristen Spillman. And there's a picture included. Kristen's parents' wedding photo, and she's wearing a beautiful white dress and veil, and he's wearing a black tux, and they both have big smiles. Next is titled, How We Met. After 4 years of college and 1 year of seminary, romance had eluded my life. Being Protestant, marriage for clergy was permissible, but where could I find a bride? During that first year of theological education, a new fast friendship with a newlywed classmate developed. When exam time came around for the world's religion or church history or theology, etc., my new friend Tandy invited me over to his apartment to study together. So over to the married couple's quarters I went, with my class notes in hand. Tandy's wife, Ruth, would leave us to go over the local hospital to teach RNs. She would kindly leave us with a fresh pot of coffee and a newly baked batch of chocolate chip cookies. I thought, if married life could be this lovely, I should get going, and thus began my daily prayer. Dear Lord, please lead me to the right girl and let me know when I find her. The next summer, while playing in our church's softball league back home, I was assigned to go over to our opponent's team and find the president of the youth group, Carol Fiscus. We were starting a rotating Sunday night Sing Spring Asian among the same group of churches after their traditional 7 p.m. Sunday evening service was over. The Singspiration was then to follow at 9 p.m. In between innings at the softball game, I found myself looking for this girl. Then I saw her. Wow. Carol was a strawberry blonde with a beautiful face and a radiant smile that blew me away. It was love at first sight. After 3 more years of education for us both, we were married on June 18, 1960. Ours was a marriage truly made in heaven. By Lewis Penhall Bird. And there's a picture of them both. Lewis and his wife Carol on their wedding day, June 1960. And he's wearing a black suit with a tie, and she's wearing a beautiful wedding dress and veil. They both have big smiles. That's all the time we have for today. This has been Mary reading from Talking Information Center from Good Old Days, March-April 2026 issue. Thank you for listening.